North Korea's going fast. Test, fail, test, fail, test, succeed. And they're learning, and you can see them learning.
Reaction to North Korea's latest launch. It's Monday, May 22nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia gives land back to indigenous residents. Wine and cheese for the Chinese. A toy for those who fidget, cleaning plastic waste, and a virtual visit with a doctor. We're glad you're visiting with us now on VOA Asia. The United Nations Security Council plans to have an emergency meeting Tuesday in response to North Korea's latest ballistic missile test. Uruguay's mission to the United Nations said the meeting was requested by the United States, South Korea, and Japan. Seoul's military said the missile was fired Sunday afternoon from the South Pyongyang province and flew about 500 kilometers before landing in the Sea of Japan. It was Pyongyang's second missile test in a week and 10th this year. A Joint Chiefs statement said our military is closely monitoring signs for additional provocation by the North Korean military, and we are keeping a full military readiness. U.S. General John Hyten, commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, summed up Pyongyang's missile program during his recent congressional testimony.
North Korea is going fast. Test, fail, test, succeed. And they're learning, and you can see them learning because that's the way you do the rocket business.
In response to North Korea's earlier tests, U.S. President Donald Trump dispatched a naval strike group to waters off the Korean Peninsula as a warning to the communist regime to end its nuclear weapons development program. But Secretary of State Rex Tillerson rejected the idea that U.S. pressure against North Korea is not working. Tillerson told Fox News, quote, "We're in the early stages of applying the economic pressure as well as the diplomatic pressure to the regime in North Korea." David Benham, spokesman for U.S. Pacific Command, said the United States will continue to monitor North Korea's actions closely and stands behind our ironclad commitment to the security of our allies in the Republic of Korea and Japan. South Korean President Moon Jae-in held a National Security Council meeting at the Presidential Blue House to discuss the latest missile launch. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe called the latest test a challenge to the world. North Korea has conducted a variety of missile tests since the beginning of last year at an unprecedented pace. Before meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping last month, President Donald Trump.
"We have a big problem. We have somebody that is not doing the right thing, and that's going to be my responsibility."
A week ago, Pyongyang launched a missile in an unusual high-altitude ballistic path that indicated it might be a new two-stage liquid-fueled rocket capable of flying up to 4,500 kilometers. That test, according to a White House statement, should, quote, serve as a call for oil nations to implement far stronger sanctions against North Korea. Meanwhile, at the United Nations, North Korea's deputy UN ambassador Kim In-rung again blamed the United States for the current tension on the Korean Peninsula, as a massive cyber attack last week is also being probed with possible North Korean connections. As VOA's Rob Raphael reports, since no one has claimed responsibility, it's not clear who is to blame.
It was the biggest hack in history, and it's a scary preview of things to come. But one thing is a lot less clear, whether North Korea had anything to do with it. Despite bits and pieces of evidence that suggest a possible North Korea link, experts warn there is nothing conclusive. A question the experts ask is why would Pyongyang carry out a big hack that hurt China and Russia? And for what appears to be a small amount of money. As of Friday, less than $100,000 paid in ransom. North Korea's Deputy UN Ambassador Kim In-rung dismissed allegations that Pyongyang was behind the cyber attacks. But identifying hackers behind sophisticated attacks is a notoriously difficult task. Proving they are acting under the explicit orders of a nation state is even trickier. Robert Raphael, VOA News, Washington.
In other regional developments, Philippine leader Rodrigo Duterte says Chinese President Xi Jinping threatened him with war if the Philippines begins drilling for oil in a disputed part of the South China Sea. Mr. Duterte later spoke with reporters.
"That is ours, and we intend to drill oil there. Mula nang palaboy-laboy. If it's yours, well, that is your view, but my view is that I can drill the oil if there is some inside the bowels of the earth, because it is out. Sagot sa akin, well, we are friends. We do not want to quarrel with you, according to China. We want to maintain the present warm relationship. But if you force the issue, we'll go to war.
President Duterte said Xi Jinping gave him a firm but friendly warning when they met in Beijing last week. Political observers said Duterte's frank account of the conversation in the Chinese capital could infuriate China. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Seoul says North Korea launches ballistic missile. TPP countries agree to move forward without the United States. A report says China killed CIA sources hobbling U.S. spying program. Vendor with bird flu prompts China to close poultry markets. President's regular Jae-in touch is a hit with South Koreans. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. After a 30-year battle, indigenous groups on Australia's Cape York Peninsula are celebrating the return of more than 160,000 hectares of tribal land. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the land has been handed back to three Aboriginal clans by the Queensland state government.
It was opposition to the world's first commercial space terminal in the mid-1980s that galvanised the indigenous land rights movement in the Cape York Peninsula. Aboriginal campaigners said plans to launch US satellites using Soviet rockets from the site at Temple Bay in northern Australia would have destroyed sacred sites. Conservationists also argued the plan would harm the area's unique biodiversity. After a long fight stretching back decades, more than 160,000 hectares of land have been returned to traditional tribal owners. Andrew Piccone, the Northern Australia campaigner for the Australian Conservation Foundation, says it was the first time Indigenous campaigners had joined forces with environmentalists.
Back in the 1980s, when the spaceport was first proposed, traditional owners launched their own campaign against that spaceport, and they had their own legal proceedings as well. They asked for support from the conservation movement because we were also interested in protecting the natural and cultural values of the Cape. So it was one of the first alliances, you could say, between Indigenous groups and the conservation movement.
About a third of the land returned to Indigenous control will be used to create Australia's newest national park. This will be owned and jointly run by Aboriginal groups and should provide jobs in ecotourism to communities that have had high rates of unemployment. As all are economic dividends, there are significant spiritual benefits too. Indigenous leaders say the land handover will give them unfettered access and control of sacred sites. Aboriginal Australians revere the land and consider it to be the mother of creation that's full of secrets and wisdom. The Queensland State Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk said it was an historic day after formally handing control of the land on Cape York back to Indigenous groups. There are now 28 Aboriginal-owned and jointly managed national parks on Queensland's Cape York Peninsula, covering more than 2 million hectares. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the New York Times reports China killed or imprisoned 18 to 20 U.S. Central Intelligence Agency sources from 2010 to 2012, dismantling a network years in the making. Investigators are divided whether a spy was within the CIA or if the Chinese hacked the CIA's covert communication system. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by. Walmart is letting online customers in China order from its Sam's Club stores in the United States for the first time to cater to China's increasingly affluent, well-traveled shoppers. It's Walmart's latest attempt to boost growth in China since it sold its online business in the country to JD, China's number two e-commerce site, in June of 2016. The U.S. retailer has a 12% stake in JD, and it hopes working with a homegrown company will boost its performance in China. Getting China right is key to bolstering Walmart's global online business, and the company says about 200 products from Sam's Club stores will initially be available for Sam's Club customers in China to order online via JD's website, expanding to 700 this year. The company is focusing on personal care, baby supplies, nutritional supplies that are mostly not available in China. Sam's Club has sold products on JD.com since October 2016, drawn from the stock in its 15 physical stores in China. Walmart itself also operates more than 400 stores in China. Well, as they order cheese, often paired with that, of course, is wine. And there's a long tradition of winemaking in California. The California Gold Rush in the mid-1800s brought a lot of people to the American West Coast seeking to strike it rich. They included people from China. After the Gold Rush, many of the Chinese stayed and worked as unskilled labor, including construction of the railroads. A lesser-known fact is that some of them also helped to lay the foundation for the famous California wine industry. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details from Sonoma, California.
Deep in a cave that stores an aegis wine is a forgotten past known to those who come to Buena Vista Winery in Sonoma County.
The late 1850s to the 1870s, they primarily were Chinese laborers.
The hands of low-wage laborers from China helped build the Sonoma wine industry while it was still in its infancy. These images of Chinese workers on the walls of Buena Vista Winery are reminders of their significance.
They did all of the working of the fields, the plowing, the actual digging, planting, and then the management of the vineyards. They definitely worked at the other properties, but Buena Vista was known to have the largest Chinese labor camp north of San Francisco.
The Chinese workers dug these caves more than 150 years ago. What remains are these pick marks. The rocks from these caves were used as building blocks for the winemaking facilities at the time. This is one of two buildings of the original that remains today.
A couple of my friends showed me the so-called Chinese rock fence. People, the local people still remember, and the Chinese laborers did something for them.
Their stories passed down by word of mouth among the locals. Historians knew about them, but what happened to them is uncertain.
We don't understand where they went after. Once they left the city of Sonoma, we don't know a whole lot of names.
Chinese immigrants at the time experienced violent anti-Chinese sentiment, boycotts, and in 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act, a law that restricted immigration into the United States.
They work here, they lived here, most of them, they die here. They don't have them a place, they didn't have them a place to be buried.
This was sort of a forgotten history of Sonoma, and then there was we had a sort of a shameful history regarding the Asian Exclusion Act, and people wanted to make things right.
To honor these nameless laborers, the Sonoma Peng Lai China Sister City Committee is raising money to build this Chinese pavilion in the city of Sonoma. Ding says this would also be a piece of history for the new Chinese who are here.
We can see a lot of investors from China. They purchase the wineries, they purchase the properties. That is the reason why. And we want to build up this kind of physical structure just to remind the people, remind us of the history, and let us know who we are, where we came from.
So the efforts of those who helped build the wine industry here will not be forgotten. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Sonoma, California.
Be sure to check out the video at voanews.com. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia: Jakarta's newly elected governor campaigned for Islam to dominate politics and society. Weeks later, the leader of Indonesia's and the world's largest Islamic organization appealed for strengthening secular values in the country to hundreds of people attending an interfaith dialogue. This and other stories on VOA Asia Facebook and voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, many years have passed since a toy intended to help children with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and autism focus was first developed. Now, almost more than a quarter century later, it's become all the rage in the United States and elsewhere. VOA Asia's David Byrd tells us about fidget spinners.
The design is relatively simple. A small circle of ball bearings in the middle of two or three blades, usually made of plastic. Hold the center, hit the blades, and voila, spinning. They're called fidget spinners, and they are flying out of U.S. stores as fast as they hit the shelves. In Oxford, Michigan, Tom Jones is the owner of Funky Monkey Toys. He told the AP that every time he orders the spinners, they sell out.
We first got a phone call for somebody asking for a fidget spinner. And at the time, we didn't know what it was. And then literally 30 minutes later, a second phone call. And when you own a toy store, that's usually a signal that you need to pay attention.
The demand is the same at 7-Elevens, where the toys are often gone as soon as they are put on the shelves. Nada Timani is a store manager in Warren, Michigan.
And they were flying off the shelf, and we have all kind of customer, like parents, kids, grandma, grandpa, they're coming, to buying for their grandkids and everything.
The toys themselves have been around for a while, but took off in March and April of this year. There is some dispute about who invented them, with some accounts saying chemical engineer Catherine Hettinger came up with the original design. Other accounts dispute that idea, but one thing is for sure. They have no patent, and now companies, including several in China, are making them as fast as possible. But whoever invented fidget spinners, their popularity took the industry by surprise. Richard Gottlieb is the CEO of Global Toy Experts.
Yeah, it's one of those freaks of nature we see every once in a while, where suddenly a toy out of nowhere suddenly takes on a life of its own.
Fidget spinners usually sell for between $5 and $15, but Amazon.com had a price range that started under $25 and went to $200 and above. One model online sold for $459. Their popularity has caused some teachers to ban fidget spinners from classrooms because instead of helping students focus, they have become a distraction. But it's not just kids who love them. Adults use them too. Kim Juszak is an attorney in New York. She uses her spinner on the subway as she heads to work.
I'm naturally kind of fidgety, and it does what it's designed for. It gives me something to do with my hands while I'm sitting kind of idle.
But the spinners aren't the only focus toy on the market. There's also the fidget cube, developed by the appropriately named ANSI Labs, Matthew and Mark McLaughlin. Fidget cubes feature six sides of fidgety fun, including buttons to click, a switch to throw, tactile gears to roll, a ball and socket to press, and a joystick to glide. The majority of the cubes sell for less than $25. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Developing at this hour in Asia, countries remaining in the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreed Sunday to explore ways to move the trade deal forward after U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out in his switch to an America First policy. Japan and New Zealand are leading efforts for the remaining 11 countries to continue. All the big stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the world is producing nearly 300 million tons of plastic every year, half of which is used just once and then thrown away. In the United States alone, we discard more than 33 million tons of plastic. Most ends up in landfills or strewn along roadways or washed into the ocean. VOA's Faith Lapidus tells us one man has a plan to start cleaning up our mess.
Plastic trash in the ocean can be deadly to marine creatures. And Greenpeace Philippines created this 15.2-meter sculpture of a dead whale out of plastic waste to raise awareness about the effects of dumping rubbish in the ocean.
When they see this, people should understand that the problem of plastics pollution is massive, and something has to be done right now. And even you as one person can contribute your good deeds, simple little things that you do can actually help make things better.
The Philippines is the third largest source of plastic pollution behind China and Indonesia. But every country contributes to the problem. Scientists estimate that 8 million metric tons of plastic, from discarded fishing nets to bottles and trash, end up in our oceans every year. And Boyan Slat has a plan to remove it.
Instead of going after the plastic, we let the plastic come to us, saving time, energy, and cost. By using the natural ocean currents to our advantage, we can let the ocean clean itself.
He told a crowd in Utrecht that his company, the Ocean Cleanup, will use kilometers-long floating barriers that drift along the water's surface to concentrate the plastic, which would then be collected and shipped to land to be recycled. He says his system won't capture the tiny particles created when larger pieces break apart, but capturing those larger pieces will help break the pollution cycle.
Of course, we will never get every last piece of plastic out of the ocean. There will always be a size that is too small to clean up, but it's really about cleaning up the bulk as much as possible for as little as cost as possible.
Slat hopes to launch the first barrier system in the large Pacific garbage patch this year and clean up 50% of the plastic circulating in it within 5 years. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Well, right now we see real doctors when we're not feeling well, but one day you might consult a virtual doctor on a new smartphone app. VOA's Deborah Block has more on this innovative technology.
Cardiologist Leslie Saxon cannot be everywhere, but perhaps in the near future, her digital avatar can.
I'm here to answer your questions.
Saxon is the executive director of the University of Southern California Center for Body Computing, which is developing the new app, DocOn. Patients could ask Saxon's avatar medical questions by using the app on their smartphones.
I'm honestly concerned about exercise. Can I work out?
Physical activity is good for your heart.
For doctors, DocOn would give them more time to focus on patients with serious health problems.
In a few years, 80% of care that's now being done in a bricks and mortar building with a point visit, us being in the same room together for that entirety of your health care visit with me and experience with me, that's going away.
So the app could be important to a patient who wants to get medical information from a doctor they already know and trust.
Okay, well, what is atrial fibrillation?
I could continually update my virtual human, make her better. Otherwise, why not just make a bunch of videos, right? But this way, I can actually learn you and your disease over time.
Computer scientist Ari Shapiro is scanning himself to show how he created Saxon's avatar. He believes patients would establish a better rapport with their digital doctor by showing facial expressions and mannerisms.
Capturing the doctor with how they are and how they express themselves would be important, as opposed to, for example, getting medical advice or information from a cartoon doctor, which you might not feel is legitimate.
Saxon hopes the smartphone sensors will collect life-saving medical data to help treat patients with medical conditions, such as arrhythmia and irregular heartbeat.
So this way I can capture your arrhythmia when you have it from your phone. I'll know where you were that day. I'll know how much activity you did just pulling from the sensors on this thing.
Saxon expects digital doctors will become a major component of personalized medical care. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and we'd like to welcome our newest listeners. Tuning in on DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines in Diliman. Thanks so much for joining us. Let us know what you think of the program. Log on to VOA Asia Facebook and send us a message. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Aiden Utku, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including David Bird and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.